This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I want to thank all of you guys for listening to this podcast and tuning in each week. It takes a lot of work to put this all together and to talk to my guests to make sure that they have time to spend with me to provide these chats for you to enjoy every week. If you enjoy these and would like to hear more, be sure to tune in, and you can subscribe to The Magic Word by just going to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com and check on the tab that says subscribe, and you can follow the directions to subscribe through the web here, or that you can also go to iTunes and download and subscribe through there. Different ways of trying to subscribe, so this way that you keep up to date all the time. And of course, that if you're on Facebook, that you can follow us and find out what's happening by just liking our page at facebook.com/themagicwordpodcast. Well, if you know how to get to us, then all the better, and that way you save yourself a little bit of time. But you're here now, and I appreciate you coming and listening to this particular podcast, which happens to be featuring Gazzo. Gazzo has been a street magician for a long number of years, and he has perhaps performed more shows than any magician on the planet. And after thinking about it, I think it's absolutely true. When you stop and think that he's been making his living for so many years, doing 20 shows a day, 7 days a week, that's a whole heck of a lot of shows. And so when you add those up, it's just been tens of thousands of shows over a lifetime that he's been performing. And so with those kind of performing chops, certainly he has seen it all and done it all and been here and there all over the world. Won several contests. There are different kinds of street performer festivals in which that he has walked away with first prize, and deservedly so. Just does a great job. Well, Gazzo recently came through the U.S. on a lecture tour and had stopped through Houston and was a guest of mine here at the house. And so we had a chance to sit down and chat for a little while and talk about some of the experiences of being on the road, some of his philosophy of life, and just life in general. I think you are going to enjoy the chat we had here with Gazzo on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and today's guest on The Magic Word, all the way from England and the world, I should say, because the world is his stage, just like Shakespeare said. Please welcome Gazzo. Hey, Gazzo.
Hello, listeners. Thank you.
Glad that you're here with us. So, yes, I mentioned that kind of the world, and you, although are from the UK, you don't spend a lot of time there, do you?
I'm residing in the UK now, but I've spent most of my time in and around Europe and America, mm-hmm. and sometimes the Middle East. So I'm using UK as a home base, you know.
Sure. Now, your specialty, of course, is street magic. And whenever you're doing that, you mentioned working in the Far East. Is there a language problem ever?
Oh, yeah, of course. I always select places where I wouldn't need a translator or they would understand the English language. So you're limited where you go. But if I do get a book in say, China or Dubai, then I would tone down a lot of the talking, so it'd be real basic English, mm-hmm. which most people understand. Most people understand basic English.
Right.
But so I'm very selective the countries that I choose to go to, because knowing I'm a verbal comic, so
exactly.
I'm funny when I'm verbal, mm-hmm. verbally, you know, the freedom of performing how I like, and that is when I'm in my element. But if I'm restricted about certain saying certain things, then my act is not as strong and it diminishes. And so I choose to go to certain places for that reason, you know.
And as far as being a verbal comedian as opposed to more visual comedy, the magic itself is just kind of comical. Whenever something happens, people are surprised and they laugh because of the sense of surprise. And so whenever that you are doing a cups and balls and something appears at the end, that people are going to laugh at that. But your act is pretty heavy on what you're saying and the double entendres, but the brashness, I guess, of what you're saying and doing, I guess.
Well, that only works if they understand English, the English language.
Sure.
I can't develop that style of show in a place, say, in China, obviously, or
yeah.
Japan. So it will be more on the visual side, and everyone understands magic. Magic is a universal language across the world. Everyone understands it.
Right.
So I will choose to tone down a lot of the verbal stuff in my show purposely, because I know it doesn't translate or work. So then I'll do more silent stuff, you know, which I'm capable of doing, but it's out of my element. I'd rather be a talking act. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it's my strength, you know?
Right.
I'm not as strong if I have to tone everything down.
Yeah. You know? Do you find, and I've heard this said before, and I found this to be the case, that audiences are different in different countries? In other words, that the appreciation for certain types of comedy is different in England than it would be in the U.S. Even across the U.S., people, say, in Minnesota would, you know, not express themselves the way that people in Texas would, or something, for an example.
No, I don't agree with that. I think audiences are the same across the whole world.
Okay.
Audience look at people the same way.
So you'd use the same line. You don't change your lines necessarily?
Again, I only do that if I'm in America, Canada, Europe, in Sweden, Switzerland, where they do speak English.
As a second language, kind of.
Yeah, a second language.
Mm-hmm. But there are nuances within the English language when you say something that they may not necessarily understand. So that's why I would think you might.
But I would choose not to develop those bits. You see what I mean?
Sure.
Because I know, I understand an audience. As soon as I come on stage, I know how far I can take that show just by the first piece I do in the show. So if that doesn't work, then I just go, okay, let's go a different direction. Let's do more the visual comedy type stuff, you know? And so that's how it works, you know? Because it's no good trying to, you know, impress an audience when you're not going to, because they just don't understand what's going on. You know, like I explained, I was in Oman just recently, and I was doing card tricks in Oman, and they completely understood. But I didn't do a lot of verbal stuff with them. You know, just like, you know, obviously spread
the deck. Gesturing.
Gesturing, yeah.
Sure.
So the magic speaks for itself, you know. But when you have, say, 300 people, you can't do card tricks. You know, you can do a few bits and pieces that would work as far as a card trick is concerned. I wouldn't do like the tossed out deck, which has been in my repertoire for 30 years, because then you have to rely on them understanding the English names of the cards in English.
Yeah.
You know, because if they tell you their card in their Arabic language, that's not going to help you. You see what I mean?
Sure.
So I would choose not to do a deck that involves a lot of talking on their behalf. You know, just a nod of the head, you know, is this your, you know.
Well, sometimes I would think that you might have an audience and you're thinking, okay, well, I am speaking their language, they understand what I'm saying, and then when you draw the next crowd, it might be a different crowd that doesn't understand the nuances. I mean, you in the same country, you know what I'm saying?
No, I don't find that. No,
okay, they're all the same.
I find that my act works in any place I go. You know, when I've been in China, they thoroughly understand what I'm doing. They're watching me with so much focus. It's just unbelievable. And I find that the Chinese audience, the Middle Eastern audiences, are so much toned in that more than Western audiences.
Now, when you do see those in any of those other places, I assume that there are other street magicians who are working, and you've seen around then also, who are local, who speak the language. Are they more verbal performers as well? Do they speak a lot, or are they more jugglers and performers? Do you notice? I mean, even though you can't understand.
Are you talking about the domestic performers?
Domestic performers, let's say in China. Let's say that whoever would be indigenous to India or wherever it is you're going to be, and you see these other street performers, and I just wonder if they are mainly talking acts the way that you would be, or are they?
Yeah, they are, but I don't understand, again, what they're saying.
Oh, of course.
So, you know, what their patter is all about. But I know that the audience are engaging that performer, and they're focused on that performer no more than what they would be if I was up there, even though I wasn't talking to them.
I know they've had some street performing contests or conventions like in Canada and other places. Isn't that right? Mm-hmm. And you've been involved, you've won some
many,
of those.
Many, yeah.
Yeah. And in those cases, I assume that, again, English is kind of the preferred language, like at FISM, where that English is the main language. And so are there other people from other countries who come and then they speak English or when they perform?
Well, again, a festival is for anybody in life, you know, all walks of life. They could be from anywhere on the planet mm-hmm. and end up being at that festival at that time and seeing a street entertainer or busker. Mm-hmm. And but the atmosphere is created by that performer. And so the person that come from, say, some part of the world ends up in Canada that doesn't speak any language, they will thoroughly understand what's going on just yeah. by the atmosphere created by the audience mm-hmm. they're involved in. That all they have to do is watch and kind of understand, although it may be lost if the act is speaking a lot of English, it may be lost. But what sells better is when it's visual magic,
sure,
like color change, dye tube with silks, color changing. Mm-hmm. You just have to watch that and understand what's going on, although you don't understand what the magician's saying.
Right.
There is a lot of talking about that trick,
right.
Vanishing a silk, you know, or rising a card out the deck. It's just, it speaks volumes. It speaks for itself. You don't really have to understand what the magician's saying. Mm-hmm. But if the magician is a comedian and everyone's laughing, then the person that doesn't speak English watching that performer will feel that he doesn't understand what they're laughing at, but he thoroughly enjoyed the show because mm-hmm. there's a lot of visual magic in it.
Sure.
In my position, there's not a lot of visual magic in my performance. My performance is geared towards a situation when I have a person sat next to me, mm-hmm. and that is what I use that person to interact with the audience. So that's what I do in my show, although my old show was more about me performing and fooling the audience big time at the end with the cups and balls.
Right.
That was my old show. I don't perform that show no more. I have a completely different format that I'm...
I was about to ask you, if whenever that you are performing, and you, in how long do you do, about 12, 15 minutes, or how long of a set do you do
Well, at a festival, on the street? At a festival where it's not really a captive... Well, it's a captive audience.
Yeah.
It's not really a street audience.
You're not
where they're walking
to draw
around,
yeah.
shopping and
right.
going to restaurants, and you sit up in the middle of that.
It's harder
atmosphere.
To stop that kind of an audience as opposed
it
to
is.
Those in a festival. They
it
want
is.
To stop.
When the festival, you're on a program. Your
sure.
name's on a program.
Yeah.
And you say, at
right.
this stage, at this particular time,
right.
is a performer, so-and-so Gazzo from England, and he does this type of performance. So they will show up at that time to watch your performance if they're interested. So that's... Although it's outside, you have their, which I consider a captive audience.
Mm-hmm.
They sit down on bales of hay or bleachers, and they watch a performance.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them sit down on little towels, mats, little picnic chairs, you know, and they sit down and wait for the performer to show up at that particular time.
Right.
So most cases, you'll get an audience of 200 or 300 people waiting for you. So you don't really have to hawk a crowd or shout and scream to get a crowd,
right.
or whatever they use to get a crowd. The crowd's waiting there. You use that crowd to build a bigger crowd.
And so how long would that set be?
In that particular case, at a festival in Canada, a big international festival, it could be from half an hour to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you do is you have a time slot for an hour.
Okay.
So you could do two shows in that hour.
Hmm. And so in that case, that you would have a lot of times, I would imagine, the same crowd who's just waiting for your next show, and then you have a second show you do, or is it the same one over?
Well, you'd have a little break, so the crowd will be dispersed.
Changed.
And
mm-hmm.
go to the next performer, and then you'll hawk another crowd.
Right.
You know, then when you would have to hawk a crowd. But what I find at a big festival is the energy that I create in my show is it's a big crowd, a big circle around me, and a lot of people can't see. So that when it breaks, they were curious to see what had happened in that circle, in
mm-hmm.
that area, that pitch. So they would ask me, when is the next show? I say, right now. Stand right there. Then all of a sudden, you're building another crowd for the second show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, but only at a festival, you know, does
yeah.
this happen. And there are a lot of festivals in Europe, Canada. There's hardly any in America.
That's true.
It's just, I don't understand. It's
weird.
Politically, I can't get involved in that. I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest, greatest country in the world, America, they won't have a festival, you know?
That's true. I recall that Mack King, and I think Lance Burton was involved with it as well, in Louisville, Kentucky, a couple of years ago, trying to put on a festival, and I don't know what kind of financial success they've had. Certainly that J. Scott Barry has been trying to do some festivals around the states, and he's had limited, if little success that he had hoped to have, and I think it's just a variety of things. It's just not something that Americans are used to seeing and attending a magic festival. They have attended a ballet festival or an art festival or, you know, wine festival or whatever it's going to be, but I think it's part of the American culture not embracing magic as being a performing art, that they're thinking, oh, well, that's going to be a kids' festival. You know, they always throw in magic to have for the kids at a festival. It's something that you add to, but not a festival that's focused around magic, whether it's street magic or stage magic or whatever else. I don't care if you have the Illusionist or Jeff McBride or whoever's going to be coming in. People just don't get it.
Well, I can explain. I comment on that.
Please do.
And I'll tell you why the general public don't get it.
Yeah.
Because if you have, okay, and I don't mean to become arrogant or boisterous when I say this. Mm. If you go to a magic festival where they're putting on certain performers,
yeah,
on the gala show, if you take those performers and put them in a stage for the public would just most of the time just say, and walk out.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interested.
Why?
Because the... If you put Mellini, okay,
mm-hmm,
and Roy Benson,
okay,
Charlie Miller, okay, I wouldn't go as far as Charlie Miller because I didn't know a lot about his history, but I knew he performed for lay people,
mm-hmm,
okay, Roy Benson, Mellini, okay, and then Denny Henney out of Denny and Lee. You put those on the bill, great, but you put Larry Jennings,
mm-hmm,
Vernon, and... let's say Charlie Miller on that bill,
mm-hmm,
for the public. I wouldn't book those three performers. But at a magic convention, I would book those three performers.
Sure, because magicians love
them. Because magicians love them.
Right.
But those three performers, I would not even in the slightest inkling put them on a magic festival for the public.
Mm-hmm.
So just because certain people work at a magic festival and they're successful, you can't put them in the public's eye because they don't know what tricks to perform.
Mm-hmm.
For the general public, that's the difference, in my opinion. But I would book Slidini that would do good at a magic festival and for lay public. I would book Juan Tamarez that would do good at a magic festival and for the lay public.
Paul Daniels
that would do good at a magic festival and the lay public. You see, mm-hmm, what I mean?
Sure, exactly.
That's the difference.
I see what you're getting at.
That's the difference.
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't book Vernon. I wouldn't book Charlie Miller. I wouldn't book Larry Jennings, and I wouldn't book Derek Dingle, mm-hmm, for the general public.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
Hmm.
And that's why certain performers that want to set up a festival, they don't know which people to book for the general public. They think they're going to get big name performers in the magic world. Yeah, general public, you could put a Yellow Pages performer up there. It was, mm-hmm, no difference from putting Daryl Martinez in there, or Jay Sankey,
it can be clever, but they're a magician, and if they don't, well, for example, David Williamson has really been
different
home
kettle
runs.
Of fish.
Yeah,
David Williamson is great for both.
Yeah,
different kettle of fish we're talking about there.
Sure.
You know?
But I'm saying he would be a good one to put into a festival.
He would be good in, mm-hmm, any situation. Yeah. David Williamson, Bill Malone's another one.
Yeah,
you know, Chad Long, another one. Mm-hmm. They're different kettle of fish we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Matt King is again a different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
Out of those ones we just pulled out the hat, you know, it'd be a successful festival.
But it's just the underground magicians, quote underground, I guess, would be the ones that would not be the names that would draw the public out. That, and even the public saw them and think, he's okay. But it's just the clever nuances that the magicians would appreciate. Oh, gosh, he did, this great move, but the rest of the people don't care.
They don't care, and they want to be entertained.
Exactly.
I would pick somebody that does the Linkin Rings, the Chinese Sticks, the Egg Bag, the Miser's Dream, over that somebody was doing invisible card tricks.
Yeah.
Invisible palming.
Right.
And ace assemblers.
Right.
Even though if they're projected on a big screen, I would never pick those performers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If anybody comes out with an Aikido box,
yeah,
I'd say next. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Not just seem contrived, but that's me if I was a producer booking of a big thing, festival.
Yeah, sure.
And that's the problem that Castle had for, you know, nearly two decades, is not picking the right people. Mm-hmm. Because the general public would come into the Castle, and on the bill would be certain names I don't want to mention over the air.
Right.
That people were basically booing them and complaining about them as they left the room.
Mm-hmm.
And but the Castle's excuse was, well, we can't afford to get the real pros in because they don't want to work for the money we're paying.
That's
huge
changed.
Mistake. Yeah. It's changed now,
yeah.
And the atmosphere's gone up.
Yeah, Joe Furlow and Jack Goldfinger have done a great job.
They've done a fantastic job. But, you know, to keep this art alive that we're all involved in, you have to pick the right people for the job.
Yeah.
To keep it alive.
Yeah.
Okay? If you do not pick the right people for the right job, then our art will diminish. And saying that further, Penn and Teller are the right people for the job, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They've done an extremely good job transferring their style of magic in the theatre to TV.
They've
done an extremely excellent professional job.
Well, they
job.
Developed, first of all, a persona and a personality, I should say a personality, I guess, that public personality, that people know who they are, as opposed to Siegfried and Roy, who were Las Vegas bound. And I've heard some people say, I think Murray Sawchuk was pointing this out to me one time, about how that when you get inside Las Vegas, it's a completely different kind of a fishbowl, because you start to see all these advertisements, you know, on billboards or on the backs of cabs or on the sides of buses or whatever else, so people you'd never heard of before necessarily. And when you go outside of the city limits, you don't hear of them then again. And very few people have gained more of a national appearance or personality like Siegfried and Roy, but, you know, that's because that they were such big stars in Vegas that people who went to Vegas would talk about their show. But with the exception of going to New York once or twice and a couple other places, maybe they really didn't ever perform outside there. My point being is there are a lot of people who are popular there, but, you know, but they can't go over to Santa Fe, New Mexico, you know, and do a big show because they don't know who they are. You know.
Well, they won't draw. Yeah, that has been a problem. By, you know, a cruise ship performer that's been on a cruise ship for 40 years,
yeah,
and all of a sudden they decide to say, we can't afford your rates anymore, or whatever reason,
sure,
they decide to not hire that magician,
mm-hmm,
anymore after he's been on that industry for 40 years.
Right.
No one knows who he is. He could be fantastic, and a lot of the performers are fantastic,
sure,
that do the ships. Their show is geared towards a cruise ship audience.
That's right.
But they could do the same show, but they need curtains, they need a spot man, they need an orchestra pit, they need a cue man for the music.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get these things? Which environment does this come in hand in hand? It doesn't exist today much. You need a theatre, and who's going to book you in a theatre, mm-hmm, for 6 nights a week so you can draw your wage?
Right.
You might get one night, a 10-minute piece in the show, then you come across as a prima donna, you're saying, who's going to do my music? Who's going to... What? What do you mean he's going to do... Just put the CD in the box.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You know, so...
Sure.
But they're not prima donnas. They know what they want.
Exactly.
And
they've had that on the cruise ships.
And then they've had, mm-hmm, that on it. They've, mm-hmm, been...
Well, those theaters just don't exist in the U.S.
No, they don't. Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the major problem. The reason why they don't exist, because magicians are considered more of a laughing stock,
mm-hmm,
unless you get into the echelon of Penn and Teller or Juan Tamarez,
mm-hmm,
which is a different level.
Right.
But the people that are coming up and having access to the internet and putting their version of Steve Forte's gambling demonstration and putting their card handling underneath him, is like, what are you doing? Are you out of your mind? You could never compete with this man.
Right.
And somebody coming up with a version of Teller's cutting the rose with the shadow work,
yeah,
just to, so they could look big in bills, and they put their version of that underneath Teller.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why would you do that?
Right.
It's not in the same league.
No.
But you have access to the internet, and that's what you do. That's what's destroying magic, is amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
See, the thing is with magic, you can make something disappear, and they go, well done, that's great,
yeah,
next. But with juggling, you have to practice your art for 12 years. Because if you drop one of those items, the audience slowly get up and walk out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So if you drop two of the items in the pattern and you're doing five bowls and you keep dropping, you go, wait a minute, let's do it again. Right. The audience go, next.
Yeah,
you have to be good to get on the stage. Right. You cannot drop. You have to be good at your art. With magic, you make something disappear in a thumb tip.
Right. Or you buy it at the magic shop today and put it in the show that night.
It's a laughing stock.
Yeah. You know? I learned that years ago. A friend of mine, Pat Hazel, was a juggler and a magician, and he was always telling me about how that he was impressed with jugglers because they actually put time into developing their skill. Again, just exactly as what you said, you can't pick up three clubs and go book a show tonight, as opposed to somebody saying, well, I got a show, what should I get? I go to the magic shop.
There you go.
You know?
That's the difference.
Yeah. And then he introduced me to the butterfly man, you know, and I saw that guy. Oh my gosh, it gives me goosebumps thinking about what he could do, you know. But going back to street magic and that kind of a thing, and you are competing with jugglers and everything. Did you juggle at first as well to try to get a crowd?
I don't compete with anybody, Scott. Well. When I'm there. You know, I have my crowd. They have their crowd.
Yeah.
It's not about competing.
That's a good way of looking at life in general.
No, my road has been mapped out. I don't compete with anybody. But I'm competing with myself a lot. Everyone has demons, so that's who I'm competing with, is the demons that are inside.
Are you competing with your last show? Are you trying to do it better than you did the show before?
No.
I mean,
look at your hat and say,
look, I made this much, maybe make more than the next.
I've never been in this for the money.
Okay.
I purposely started street magic because I wanted to be good at my art.
And that's why you can do it over and over.
And I've done three tricks for 30 years instead of 30 tricks in 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was what I was going to ask you. You said that you had your old show, now you got a new show. And so in that old show, you just had a few tricks that you would do during that set?
The old show has been developed over 30 years. I can still do the old show.
And what's in it? What were the effects?
It was a rising card and then cups and balls.
That's it?
Yeah.
I say that's it. I mean,
I do an ambitious card at the beginning, rising card.
And that would take about how long? For the whole
25, 30 minutes.
Okay. That's amazing when you stop and think some people have got 20 tricks in 30 minutes that they do.
It's like, that's the problem.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the major problem. And it was actually Ken Brook that said to me, and Murray in Blackpool, Murray the escape artist, said, if you want to be good, stick with three tricks for the rest of your career. And the three tricks in my career have been cups and balls, the black bag, which is the egg bag. I don't call it the egg bag because it gives it away. Who wants to see my color-changing deck routine?
Mm-hmm.
You come out and you say, I'm going to perform the egg bag now. Duh.
So what's in that bag?
You know, it's called the black bag or the piece of fabric.
Sure.
You know.
Never call it what it is. Don't call it a sponge ball.
Never call it.
Silks.
Yeah. Only pros would understand this, though. The magician wouldn't understand it. So, well, the amateur magician, not the professional working magician, would understand what I'm saying. They actually suggested to me when I was young, if you want to get good at something, you need an audience to perform in front of.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have an occasion where it's the same audience every week, like your local restaurant or your local bar or pub, where you frequent the same people sat on the bar stool, you have to have a wide range of magic tricks, which I would rather do the opposite. I would rather go to a place where tourists frequently go. And each week a tourist go there for 1 week and then they leave, they fly out, and then the next bunch of tourists come in. They fly out and then the next bunch of tourists come in. Now those tourists might be there for 2 weeks or even longer if they're wealthy. So each week is, where would you pick that? It would be a holiday resort town, you know, where people would frequent, where they would go from up north, Canada, Quebec, and then end up going to Florida, Miami, Key West, where it's like a resort town, or St. Thomas, you know. In Europe, it would be the Canary Islands or Ibiza, you know. So they would go to a resort town by yacht or by aeroplane to get to that resort. Mm-hmm. They would spend 2 weeks there. And then the magician would come out and do tricks. The magician could keep his repertoire the same as what it was a week ago because it's a different audience.
Right.
Same with cruise ships. Cruise ships, to me, is a perfect audience.
They change out every week?
They change every week.
Or sometimes it's every 2 days, whenever.
Well, it all depends on the occasion of the cruise, you know. Mm-hmm. So that is a perfect audience, but not a perfect environment. Because you get buried and you get sucked into an environment, you think you're doing well, But who knows you?
Well, beyond that, you also leave all of your contacts behind. In other words, that someone might be successful.
Don't, though. Yeah. Keep your contacts.
But it's difficult to do
it.
It is. Because people want to call you to say, hey, that we need you for this party. And it's like, I'm out to sea for the next 6 months. And so then you get somebody else, and before long, you kind of fall out of. Even if you keep a newsletter or try to keep in contact, which is difficult overseas when you're trying to get poor internet connection and the Wi-Fi is not at sea or whatever. Yeah. And I think you can lose your contacts. I'm just saying the majority of guys I know who have gone to sea have just kind of disappeared, basically. They're fantastic performers, but it's just a choice of life, I think. What do you
It is a choice. When you're a professional, you do choose, but you have to chase the money as well.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get paid for your craft.
Sure.
And if you're not getting paid, then you have to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a job, you may not be happy. You might want to do something else with your life.
Right.
But with professional magicians, I think most professional magicians love performing. And the money is not the end result. The lifestyle is the end result,
mm-hmm.
okay? You have to pay your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep collecting magic. And you see what I mean?
You have to
keep that environment going where you live.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a wage at the end of the week to support your lifestyle.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
And I think cruise ships is a perfect career choice for some people. I'd done cruise ships. It was never a perfect environment for me because I was unknown. I was never getting tuxedo nights. I was getting shorts night, where t-shirts and shorts. And to see a man who's about 80 years old holding hands with his parents, and they've gone on a camel ride, you know, to see the pyramids. They come back. They do not want to come into the showroom at 8 o'clock to see a magician from England. You see what I mean?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But if they've been on the ships for 4 nights, they get really claustrophobic and they want to go and see a show and they want to put a tuxedo on and go see the show. That's different. I never got those nights because I haven't been established.
Mm-hmm.
But people like Chip Romano, who's been on the ships for 30 years, he will always get tuxedo nights.
Mm-hmm.
And deservedly so, because he's been on the ships for so long, he deserves to get tuxedo nights.
Yeah, Chip's paid his dues.
Paid his dues.
Yeah, yeah.
So when it comes to the finest restaurant in the world, Chip Romano will get the head section when he's a waiter on it.
Mm-hmm.
The newcomer from El Salvador,
it's going to be the busboy.
The busboy is going to be the busboy.
Yeah.
No disrespect to the people from El Salvador. You see what I'm getting at.
Of course.
So you can't go on a cruise ship and demand tuxedo night.
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell are you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, next. Get out. You've got to do your dues. And just putting your magic on the internet is not doing your dues. You don't pay your dues that way.
Right.
Just by trying to... Here's the thing. You need... You can... Can I use the word here?
Yeah.
Okay, I just said it anyway. I might as well carry on. You can bull your whole life, right? But at the end of that section, you still need a show.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a show and people... You've been talking about yourself forever and ever, your whole 30 years. You're the greatest performer. I'm the best here. I'm the best there. And nobody can do this. Nobody can do that. I am the best there is.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, people start believing that. But people sing your praises and they go, but I've never seen this performer. Well, how do you know he's good? Well, because everyone talks about him.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
It's hard to live up to that reputation.
You're allowed to do that on the internet.
Yeah.
You don't need a show today. You just need the internet to brag about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, your show was...
Speak for itself.
Spoke for itself. Cardini, Slidini.
Mm-hmm.
These performers were talked about. Roy Benson. They were spoken about with the general public because their show spoke volumes. And they ride on their show. Their reputation preceded it.
Mm-hmm.
They preceded their reputation. So people understood that they were good performers because they saw their show and they said it's a great show, the general public. But people are talking about performers today and they don't even have a show. But the bullshit will catch up with that performer.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that 30 years, you're going to need a show.
That's
true. You're going to need a show. And you don't have a show, next.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of nexts in this industry,
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Again, going back to a street performer, so you're saying you have a new...
Sorry, I jumped ahead.
No, that's fine. That's what this is all about, that you have a new show. So what is different with the new show?
I found out...
And was it just you were tired of the old one? Or you wanted to
challenge
yourself?
No. Nothing. It's nothing to do with that. I get bored.
Yeah.
I get bored very easily. And if I can... develop new material, if I can develop new lines and new nuances in the show, why can't somebody else? You know. Mm-hmm. So what I've done in the last 8 years, say 10 years, I found out that the bigger the crowd it is, the less locations you're allowed to work. Purposely, because the merchants will complain. The police will get called on because there's a massive circle and the lady with the baby carriage or the pram mm-hmm. stroller can get through. Whatever mm-hmm. reason is, the religious group that couldn't get through, mm-hmm. the guy's there screaming and yelling, and the refrigerator magnet salesman on mm-hmm. the cart is not selling his magnets as what he did yesterday.
Because you're taking his crowd.
Because you're taking his crowd. Mm-hmm. So these cause problems. So what I've done is developed a smaller show, okay, purposely not to attract attention to myself, so I can work in any volume, any area.
You developed a show not to draw a crowd.
Not to draw a crowd.
As big a crowd.
Not to draw a biggest crowd, but I can still work. Huh. I want to work. I love working. I'm an entertainer. I've been an entertainer since I was 16. Uh-huh. I love doing what I do. But I have to make money. So I can carry on doing what I'm doing.
Of course.
And if I don't make money, then I have to go get a job, and I don't want to get a job. What am I going to do?
Right. Well, it's like a shark. You got to keep moving. You got to keep feeding.
You got to keep feeding.
Yeah, that's right. When you're performing, then also, what do you do to draw a crowd? I often like to ask the street guy, you know, what gets the tip? How do you get the guys stopped? Because the same thing, like I know with trade shows when I'm working, it's one of the most often asked questions is, how do you stop the crowd?
Well, you don't see, that's the secret of street performing. You can't stop a crowd. You have to be in the middle of that crowd. If you're in the middle of that crowd and you start doing a show, the crowd will build.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But if you're across the street, then you have to stop a crowd. Mm-hmm. You have to call a crowd.
So you go to where the crowd is.
You have to go to where they are, where they're walking. Uh-huh. Now, the police might say, not today, move on.
I was about to say, you have to get permits in many of these places?
I don't go to places, Scott, where there's permitted situation, because mm-hmm. I don't agree with that. You have to do a police background check. I got nothing to hide. I've never had a problem with any authorities, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't do vulgar in my show, although that's my reputation. I do a street show, don't get me wrong. It's right. A gritty street show.
There's some street language.
And there's some street language in there.
Yeah.
But if there's families, if you put me in Disney World, the environment, right, I can still work that crowd.
On Main Street.
But I don't feel comfortable because that's not my audience. Mm-hmm. To make that show work, I would have to tone everything down and be less gritty and more commercial.
You think you're more of a Renaissance Festival kind of guy?
It's same with Renaissance Fair. Mm-hmm. I can fit in any situation, but I choose to work the streets because that's me. That's my situation. That's when I can vent. Mm-hmm. Now, the people that were in Disney World are now put in the village in New York City, Greenwich Village. They're in that environment, they will get offended of anything I do or even the way I dress. They will start to leave. But the street people of New York understand what's going on. They will start coming in volumes. So if you put me in Disney World, I can still perform, but I wouldn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And the same premise as somebody from Disney World coming to Washington Square Park to see my street show, they wouldn't feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I choose my battles. I choose where I go. That's me. Again, I am it's a street show, and it works because I make money. And if I become a commercial performer in New York, the crowd would just walk away.
Yeah.
To me, you know.
Well, that goes back to what you were saying, that you have to earn money, and you're going to do what it takes in order to do that. And I remember talking with Simon Lovell several times, and he has street language that he uses sometimes, and that when I've booked him at magic conventions, they would say, well, is he going to talk like that? So, well, he said, I promise I will be G-rated, and maybe between you and me, when we're sitting at the bar, I'll speak like this. But he said, if I know beforehand it's going to be family audience, it's going to be a family show, and I'm going to watch my language or whatever.
But he doesn't. That's the problem.
Yeah. Occasionally he kind of slips. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's been his problem.
But he shouldn't. Yeah. He shouldn't slip. He should be professional. Mm-hmm. I've seen him cuss the F word many times in front mm-hmm. of families, and I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
But that's, you know,
Simon.
Now it's biting him in the ass, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has. Yeah. Well, what about building the hat? What do you do at the end in order to pass the hat? What do you say or do to?
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, that's the secret, again, of street performing. And I honestly believe if you ask the correct way, without appearing that you're begging,
right?
The audience will come forward. Not everyone, you know, not 80% will come forward and give you some form of currency. It could be a dollar bill, or it could be a $20 bill. Mm-hmm. You know, it all depends what it is. And that's how I get rewarded from my show, is by a donation as such, not a tip. Because if you say the word tip, that means loose change psychologically.
Oh, that's interesting.
Huh. Tip means to ensure prompt service.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a tip. You know, the backhander and the guy tips you a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was in the '20s. You know, that was a lot of money, a quarter, mm-hmm. I suppose. But today, you know, loose change means a tip.
Well, someone had told me once before. I think it might have been Eric. What's his name? Darn it. Who was another street performer, and saying, someone had said they use like a loosely woven basket so that change would fall through the hole.
That come from me.
Well, maybe that was you. Okay. Yeah. Maybe they got the idea from you.
Yeah,
okay.
They got the idea from me. That was a long time ago.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a fishnet, actually, a frying net. I made a hat out of a fishnet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Clever idea.
Yeah, well, it didn't work. It's just a visual gag, you know. It's just funny, but... You know, it's just...
But you gave it up because it really wasn't...
Well, it was just... I used it at one festival one time. It was funny. It was actually for a TV thing.
Mm-hmm.
They were filming me and I come out with a wire mesh hat. You know, it's too subtle.
Uh-huh.
You know? Mm-hmm. Performers understood it.
Yeah.
But the general public, no, they don't get it.
Yeah. And so are there things that you're saying during your show that are that keep people there to the end... Whenever that you're going to be able to pass the hat, because I know that part of the problem that a street performer might have is that people are not necessarily planning on seeing a street magician. They're on their way either shopping or they are on their way to an appointment or something, but then they are distracted by you. How do you keep people?
Well, that's an easy answer. You don't want to perform a lunchtime crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Lunchtime crowds are less engaging because they have a rendezvous. They mm-hmm. have an engagement. They have to mm-hmm. get back to the office. So if you're trying to do a show at 10 to 2, you're not going to build.
Yeah.
You do a show at, you know, 10 past 1, and you do a 20-minute show, you're going to get a nice little hat and mm-hmm. a nice show. And but you're going to do two or three of those in that hour lunchtime between 1 and 2. If you can do 20 minutes, that's free 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But if the lunchtime area in New York is between 12 and 2, then you've got more chance of making your money. The best time is to do at 7:05
p.m.
7 p.m. Mm-hmm. in an area where there's a closed pedestrianized street where it's closed off to cyclists, skateboarders, people with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a shopping area?
I don't know what you call it in America, a
pedestrian mall.
Mm-hmm. Not so much a mall, because a mall is a contrived and controlled environment. And they play pipe music, elevator music.
Well, I'm not talking about an indoor mall. I'm talking about an outdoor.
Even an outdoor mall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, even an outdoor mall. It's got that same atmosphere. And you get like a security company parading around.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not the best environments to perform at. The best environments would be like Washington Square Park. Where it's a park and people go there and just hang out, buy a beer, a Coke. Mm-hmm. And a hot dog, and they just chill out on the fountain, and you do a show. That's
right.
The best environment. But that's a very rare environment. There's places in London that are good, like the Embankment or Covent Garden, people...
Yeah.
It's an outdoor area.
Mm-hmm.
There's no cars going around, but it's a good it's a good atmosphere mm-hmm. for a street show. But they're very rare. They don't exist a lot, you know, mm-hmm. And I don't understand it. But what changes, let me explain this. You get a street. The first thing is usually starts at a college street, a college town. And the kid is started making watercolor postcards and he sells them on the street. And he puts his jacket down and his girlfriend is now making hemp beads.
Mm-hmm.
She puts the jacket next to him making hemp beads. Then all of a sudden the guy is carving wooden dolls. And he puts a blanket, a coat next to him. So they take a jacket off. And then another hippie comes down and starts selling carvings of his skateboard he did. He can carve your skateboard or hand paint your skateboard.
Yeah.
So he puts his artwork down. And then he puts a blanket down because his stuff is bigger.
Sure.
So then all of a sudden, a street that was not very a very sought-after street as far as... the authorities are concerned, it's a rundown street, now becomes a popular street.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is across the street, there's a guy doing character chores of people's faces. And then the next person to him is doing chalk drawings. Okay. The next person to him is charcoal drawings. The next person to him is selling photographs of certain landmarks in America. Mm-hmm. And then the tourists come down and they start slowing up. And they go, there's a nice restaurant there. Let's go there. And so if that restaurant's there, then next door to that restaurant is another restaurant, seafood restaurant, then a Mexican restaurant. Yeah. It goes down like this. And mm-hmm. it slowly goes down, and the street becomes a really
thriving
nice
area.
Street
sure.
to do. What did the authorities do? First thing the authorities do is stick parking meters around the area.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Now
they see they can make some money.
It's making money. We can make money off the tourists that are coming. They're coming down in thousands. Next thing you see is Starbucks, right?
The Starbucks
after
of the
Starbucks,
world,
Seattle's best across the street. Mm-hmm. Then next after that, and these people go around the country looking for prominent streets that were run down, and now they're really
taken off,
yeah. and they want to get their
brand.
Chain stores mm-hmm. or their brand on that street,
sure.
and that's going across America.
Mm-hmm.
Now the authorities are saying this is happening. This is great. The first thing they do is say to the hippie,
you got
to
move on.
You got to move on because this guy here is selling sunglasses, right?
Designers, in a sunglass hut or something.
Designer
like that,
sunglass hut.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to move on. Why? Well, because you're selling sunglasses that were from China. You've bought them from China on your travels from Thailand.
Off,
you're back now. Mm-hmm. You filled up your suitcase and you're trying to sell them for a little profit. But what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, but this guy's selling high-end sunglasses, but I was here before him. Yeah, but you see, they come to the meeting. We have a big town hall meeting.
Yeah.
And this guy's been complaining about you. This guy's paying high rent to be here. You're not paying rent.
Right.
But this is, I started this street. I was the first guy here.
Mm-hmm.
No, but you got to go. You know? Oh, boy. Okay, unless you get a permit. You know, and if you have a permit, now you need a vendor's license. And a vendor's license, you can't have a blanket on the ground. You have to get a table.
You have a storefront then.
And then you have to get a storefront and, mm-hmm. you know, and this
is
how
gentrification.
It goes. This is how it goes. And what happens? Starbucks complain. You know, this guy over there, he's got a little coffee machine. You mm-hmm. know, he's taking away our profits. Yeah, but he was there before you, Starbucks.
Right.
Yeah, but he's got to go. Okay, why? Mm. Well, because we had a town meeting and I know I'm paying my taxes. He's not paying taxes. You know, he's a bum.
Right.
Okay, we'll get the authorities down on him. The police come to him. Well, you know, Starbucks says you got to go. You know? So this goes down the road. And mm-hmm. slowly, all these hippies that started that street, you know, and now left. And where do they go? Somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And Starbucks say, wait a minute, you know, our sales are not as good as they used to be. But what can we do? We've signed a 10-year lease to be here on this street. Just pull up and leave. But what about the guy that says, you know, you owe us 10 years of rent payments? You know, let him sue us.
Yeah.
So now the to let, vacant, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. storefront, to let, all the way mm-hmm. across. They destroyed the area by letting corporate America destroy a street.
Yeah.
That's how it starts, you know. If they just left the little man alone,
yep.
it would be fine.
But they continue to coexist.
But the little man argue amongst each other.
Because mm-hmm.
this guy's got a generator for a light on his jewelry.
Yeah.
So he can stay there for longer hours.
Yeah.
You see, and then he's saying, you know, I'm going to get a generator as well. And there's too much noise going on. So the little men, the hippies are arguing amongst themselves instead of coincide. It's about greed. Everything's about greed on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
I see it happening. So I'm less conspicuous. That's why I've just designed something that people walk past. Just want to leave me alone so I can carry on doing what I do in my life.
And you can do what you want to do and make what
I
you
hope
want.
So.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Well, tell me, just to start to close here, a couple of stories as far as what's been like. I've heard some street stories where they've had problems with people who have come by, or maybe a good story or a bad story that when you share, maybe in your lecture or something, is there something that you comes to mind that you've had a problem or an issue or?
Well, I've had many issues, many problems,
yeah.
as obviously the 30 years I've been
performing. I would think so.
You know, problems do arise, and I do respect my audience, believe it or not. I have a lot of respect. All my humor is like put-down humor and sarcasm. It's a street show.
Yeah, like Don Rickles. I mean,
Don Rickles. I mean, they wanted me to open for him when he come to Boston, and his team said I was too strong. So being good in this business doesn't help you, you know?
That's interesting.
It's true. Yeah, that's true, true. And I have had a lot of problems, and nothing major. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had problems with the police.
They haven't thrown you in jail or anything?
No, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. I've been in jail a few times for other reasons, overnight, and I got leg on my own recognizance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but I've never had a record. You know. Mm-hmm. I've never got into some altercations, fist fights with people. I do believe that buskers should police themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the authorities should get involved in giving permits and background checks and all this, because that is geared towards somebody that lives in that town.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you have an address. But if I was traveling across America and I wanted to stop off in Santa Barbara and do a street show, in the 70s and 60s, you could do it. You just stop off there. But today, you need a permit.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on my way to San Francisco. I'm hitchhiking, going up to San Fran. No, you need a permit. If you don't get a permit, you're a terrorist. See what I mean?
Sure.
So it's control, and it's not helped street performers in this country. And you can't control freedom. You can't do it. And people rebel against authority for that reason. Mm-hmm. I rebel against it. Well, I don't really rebel against it. I don't agree with it. I just choose not to be in an area where you need a permitted system. Key West has gone into a permitted system. I don't like it. So you won't see me in Key West anymore.
In San Francisco?
San Francisco has still got the freedom of it, but there are areas like Pier 39, that was the mecca of street performing, is now a permitted system, an audition, and they choose to say who performs on that pier and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many strong acts. One of the biggest acts in the world today wanted to perform at South Street Seaport in New York, which is considered the environment where I told you about all the chain stores going in.
Yeah.
It was Mar and Par stores back then. Now it's chain stores, the Limited, you know, Baby Gap.
The Gap, yeah.
Banana Republic, you know, zigzagging like
Pottery
this.
Pottery Barn and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just... But it never used to be like that when I first come to America. I could see it happening. Now it's happened, but they've destroyed it. So one of the strongest performers in the world today, probably one of the top performers, he auditioned for a South Street Seaport and never got in.
Why was that?
Who knows? But he's the strongest performer in the world. He never got in. That's just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
Because you got an intern who's 19 years old. She's put in position, and her job now is to audition acts. What the hell does she look for?
Yeah.
She's got no idea.
Right.
And another example is when I was lecturing about 10 years ago, I went to a magic club in New Jersey, and I asked the gentleman to shuffle the deck. And this gentleman could not shuffle cards properly in any form of fashion. They dropped and they were bent, and the corner was creased up.
Couldn't do an overhand shuffle.
He could not do any shuffle, and he was the president of the club.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, you say goodness, but I find a lot of that happening.
Wow.
And he is put in position to judge a 15-year-old kid that comes up, wants to be a member of that club.
Right.
And he turns around and says, no. I'd be like, shuffle that deck first before he does. You shuffle that deck.
We'll decide.
Then we can decide, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure this 15-year-old kid has got more skill than that president of the club. I'm sure he does. But the guy that was voted in to be the president of the club is the guy that's destroyed the club, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Not that particular guy, but as a whole across America.
Canada. Yeah.
And in Europe.
But there are a lot of people who are hobbyists and who enjoy magic and listen to this podcast. I mean, they're just all over the world. I mean, there are a lot of rooms in this house of magic for different skills and different interests, whether you're a collector, whether you're close-up or stage or mentalism or escapes or whatever it might happen to be, or those who just attend meetings and that are the backbone, because those are guys who move the chairs, pull the curtain, sell the tickets and everything, but they can't shuffle a deck of cards.
They can't shuffle a deck of cards.
Yeah, yeah. But they just kind of like to be around magic and magicians, I think.
But they shouldn't be given power.
I see your point there.
You know?
Yeah. To make judgment.
To make judgment and not allow the club to grow, not allowing new members because...
Well, and sometimes, in their defense, I would say that some of those guys who may not be as skilled as a magician, as a performer, might
what
be either...
some of those guys? Name them,
well,
Scott.
who would be good politicians, who are good managers and know how to conduct a meeting or understand Robert's Rules of Order, but they don't understand other things having to do with it. They'd be good in any club, but just happen to choose magic.
Yeah, I'm a leader of followers.
You're a leader of followers.
I'm a leader of followers, yeah. I don't follow the leader. I'm a leader of followers.
Okay.
So, yeah, there is room, and I shouldn't draw the line, but I just find it very distasteful for me that somebody is the judge and jury of a club, decides which direction that club goes, and he doesn't know the first thing about magic, or collecting dinky toys, or collecting action figures, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever the position is in the club, I find that the guy that's got voted in has got no skill whatsoever. And magic to me is a skill-based product.
It is.
It's.
But again, there are many rooms in which that there are people who, let's say Dr. Albo, he was a collector.
Brilliant.
I don't know if he was a performer. Personally, I did not know him, as a performer. I knew him as a collector. And sometimes you can perform something that is from your collection, but it's not yours.
Yes, there is room. You're right.
And so, that's what I'm saying, is some people just have interests. It seems like Bob Lund, who was the curator of American Museum of Magic up in Marshall, Michigan, was just saying that I am just a curator of someone holding these things at a point in time, then passing them on to someone else. Yeah. But I don't think he considered himself a magician so much as it was a collector of magic things.
Right.
So he had an interest, and he had a deep knowledge, obviously, of magic and magicians and what people did, when and who they were and everything. So they would be in the world of magic, but not necessarily magicians.
So there's room for them.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you.
But as far as being in a position where you're going to be judging somebody, I think that's wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong.
I mean, you wouldn't want to see them at FISM.
And they are at FISM. That's the other thing, isn't it? They're all over FISM.
Yeah, get me started on
and they're
that.
And they're in Blackpool, too.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So it's just, that's my kind of hate in this business, you know?
Yeah, I understand.
You know, and that is why I remain an entertainer and I don't join clubs and I don't go to permitted festivals or street areas where you need a permit
or permission
or an area where they have a program where a 19-year-old girl is
in charge of giving the permits.
Yeah, and I choose to stay away from that environment.
Well, again, in wrapping up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So I always like to ask my guests, what is your philosophy of life? What is it that you live by? What's important to you? It wouldn't necessarily have to be a magic word. I don't mean like abracadabra. I mean, it could be a sentence, a phrase. You know, what's important?
Okay, the longest way around is the shortest way home.
The longest way around is the shortest way home.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. And less is more.
There's a lot to be said about that. Yeah, less is more. So we'll leave it at that, because less is more, rather than me expounding on that. Gazzo, thank you very much. I appreciate you being a guest here today on the MagicWordPodcast.com. That was Gazzo. This is Scotty L.
Well, I again want to thank Gazzo for being my guest and for delighting us with all of his stories and his philosophy on life. A lot of good thoughts in there and some suggestions that we could probably use. Next week, we're going to be having something a little bit different, going in a different direction and talking with Scott Hollingsworth, who was the entertainment director for the Magic Island for a long number of years. The Magic Island in Houston, of course, had closed after the hurricane in October of 2008, but I thought it'd be kind of interesting to kind of get an update to see what Scott knows, if anything's going on with the island, but perhaps more importantly, what it was like back in its heyday. That'll be on for next week here on the Magic Word Podcast. So until next week, be well, get booked, and go out and find your own stage. This is Scotty out.